You're listening to a Beat the Chip special podcast. Today, a congressional hearing convened on whether or not to press forward with mandatory regulations for states to comply with the Real ID Act. Representatives at the House Judiciary Subcommittee acknowledged that states had improved upon additional benchmarks for secured ID cards, and 25 states had legislated rejection of the federal mandate, citing cost and information security issues concerning to privacy. DHS Officer Secretary David Heyman stated it was difficult to maintain national compliance with 16 states who have banned regulations. However, Real ID proponents maintain they are making progress moving ahead with regulatory conventions. These issues will need continued clarification. We again turn to ACLU's Privacy and Technology Legislative Council, Chris Calabrese, to examine the current path of Real ID in the nation. So, one of the questions I had for you earlier was, why now to call this up and bring this up? January 2013, which is the Real ID deadline for compliance, the next one, is a long way away. And I suspect that some of the reasons for the announcement is because entities like the NCSL, which is the National Conference of State Legislatures, decided, we can bend on Real ID regulations a little bit. And then there was a news release or two from the Center for Immigration Studies, who are a Real ID proponent in Washington. Do you think this had anything to do with that?
Well, I mean, the short answer is, it's always a little mysterious why Congress, committees call up particular issues at particular times. You know, I think this was probably a combination of a number of things. I mean, clearly, Congressman Sensenbrenner, since he became, chair of the Crime and Terrorism Subcommittee, wanted to do something on Real ID at some point. We're starting to get to the second half of a Congress, which means many of the straightforward issues that, representatives have been sort of chomping at the bit to address have already happened. And because we're going into the election season, there aren't, honestly, as many substantive issues still teed up. So they go looking for, for hearing topics. And, they definitely want to push DHS to force states to comply with Real ID. And they may have learned that DHS was thinking about doing some kind of guidance to states, so they figured this was a good time to do a hearing. And I'm sure the fact that, proponents of the law were asking for it probably didn't hurt.
That's an important reason to understand, the pace of where this is going. It is the silly season in Washington, in an election year. And Real ID has been kind of guilty as an issue of not being taken seriously nationwide because it's been kicked down, at least since 2005. They broke out the regulations in 2008, and they haven't been able to do very much. But there's still some regulations which are getting in there. So, this is kind of a nuanced game. Like, well, how much is too much? And, what are we bartering with? And, what's a regulation that's okay and what's not okay? And there's a ton of these little fine lines with Real ID. And, I always use the holographic laminate as an illustration of what contractors are getting pilled out. What would you think is going on in the silly season for this issue? Is it a serious issue? Is it not a serious issue? Why or why not?
It's serious insofar as there is existing federal law. I mean, the Real ID is the law, which means that it will, earn a certain amount of deference from the agencies. I mean, honestly, Real ID probably receives less deference than almost any federal statute that I can think of, just because states have been so resistant to complying with it. But I mean, it's federal law. It's gonna receive at least some minimum level of respect. It is difficult. To your larger point, it is tough to say. We have seen a great deal of resistance in the states, and that's been very positive. We've also seen some level of compliance with some parts of the Real ID Act, and I think it does require a pretty nuanced analysis of what are the privacy harms of that level of compliance, what can we do about it. I mean, some states are going to make changes to their licenses independent of Real ID. So, it is a little bit of a tricky analysis.
So as far as gains and losses, have there been any privacy gains in terms of Real ID?
Yeah, no, I think we've seen some significant gains. Probably the most notable is that no one is talking about building a national database of driver's license information anymore. In spite of the fact that that's explicitly what the Real ID Act calls for, what it technically calls for is the interlinking of all the state driver's license databases so they can be accessed by, so one state can access every other state's databases, but that amounts to one giant database. And that's essentially been shunted aside. It's not required by the regulation anymore. And, so that's a huge gain. The second, probably most significant gain, is just that a number of states simply aren't doing this now. They've passed laws saying that they're not going to comply with Real ID, which means that it prevents Real ID from, in essence, becoming a national ID card made up of the 50 state driver's licenses. So those are two big privacy wins. And we've also pushed back on some sort of smaller issues, like we've gotten DHS to acknowledge that there needs to be some flexibility in this idea of putting your address on the front of the card so a survivor of domestic violence doesn't have to reveal her principal address. There's been some of the lesser issues like that, we have seen some progress. I think there's still a ways to go on some of the smaller issues, though.
Let's talk about maybe some of the more concerning things regarding AMVA's recommendation that the EVVE system be used, or E-Verify. There is a bridge between Real ID and E-Verify.
Well, the EVVE system is not E-Verify. Those are two different systems, just to clarify.
Okay.
The EVVE
Thank you.
Is a database of birth certificates. E-Verify is a system that employers use to verify a social security number to see if you're work authorized. So they're two different databases, though they both raise privacy issues.
Okay, so they're so close. That's an important detail, Chris.
Sure. Well, the thing with the what's called the EVE database, which is the EVVE, is the reason that it's really problematic, I think, is because when you're digitizing things like birth certificates, you're really creating an enormous honeypot for identity thieves. And that's always why I laugh when officials say, oh, well, Real ID is going to help with identity theft. Well, in most cases, your birth certificate is much safer in some dusty file drawer in, a county clerk's office somewhere versus online, potentially accessible to anybody who's got enough hacking skills to get into that database and grab it. And then once your birth certificate is compromised, and say it's used to compromise other identity documents or get a driver's license in another state, I mean, you're in real trouble. And of course, Real ID requires not just the digitizing of birth certificates, but also potentially the digitizing of other source documents, like, say, your Social Security card.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, really what you're doing is forcing states to put online all the information that can be used to steal your identity.
What's going on with E-Verify? That's the same thing. People would argue it's the same thing, and it's not just digitizing the document, it's checking the document and sticking it in a government cloud.
Well, it's not exactly the same thing. I mean, E-Verify relies on the use of the Social Security number itself. It's not a physical scan of your Social Security card, for example. If you go to an employer who uses E-Verify, what the E-Verify employer is going to do is type in your Social Security number along with your name from the documents that you provide them, i.e. your birth certificate or your passport or mm-hmm. your driver's license, and that information will be used to verify whether they think you're work authorized. And that's, there are significant problems with that system, but it's not quite the same thing. You're not actually putting a scan of the physical document online like you are with the EVE system.
This is really good. It's good to be talking and having that dialogue with people who are better informed about the technical parts of this.
Well, they are, these are pretty big government databases, so.
it is very confusing because they multiply their efforts.
Well, I mean, the thing that's troubling, I think, about E-Verify, and one of the things that we've been worried about for a while, is that E-Verify is actually much further along than, say, like the EVE system. The EVE system, which is the system that scans birth certificates, I mean, they're scanning birth certificates, but it's not really very clear how states or entities would actually access that database. It's, in some ways, it's almost like a database that's sitting there without a great deal of utility. Whereas the E-Verify system is being actively used, you know, tens of millions of times a year. It relies on existing databases in Social Security and DHS. I mean, it's a much more complicated system that's accessed much more frequently. Mm-hmm. And I think our worry certainly, or one of our worries certainly, is that that system will then take in more information. It will start to take in things like driver's license information, and it will become a full-fledged national ID system rather than, you know, a cardless national ID system, if you will, where, you know, you'll be asked to, you know, provide your identity and then, or asked your name, and then it will be checked against E-Verify, and up will pop a photograph of you. So they won't need your card in order to sort of verify your identity, and that's a very scary concept.
Okay, so there was something in there that kind of ran that all together. I had a feeling that it was going to go that direction. You've confirmed it. I was pretty much right on that one. But back to, or the EVE system, as you call it, there are people getting spit out of EVE who have real birth certificates. There was a young woman in Colorado. I sent you her story. 20 years old, married, with a kid, cannot get a driver's license in Colorado because of real ID requirements. She got spit out of EVE for some reason.
Well, I can't speak to her particular case. I mean, it's certainly something we've been talking about for really since Real ID was passed, which is this danger that if you create these really cumbersome requirements, the inevitable result is going to be people who should be able to get a license, who should be able to get these benefits, are not able to do so. I mean, there was a story in USA Today a couple of months ago that documented dozens of cases where people, for a variety of reasons, weren't either able to produce the documents, were getting the runaround when they tried to get an exception for some reason. So it's not an isolated problem. It's clear, Real ID is clearly causing hardship for people. And that's really a separate problem. I mean, it's not so much a privacy problem, but it's clearly a sort of a due process issue where folks are not able to get the government services that they should be able to get because of cumbersome regulations. And that's a problem with a problem with Real ID in those states where states have gone further in trying to promote Real ID.
Well, it makes it really ridiculously tough if you are even trying to vote in some states these days or just drive anywhere. If you need basic, you know, legal transportation to get yourself from A to B, and you don't have a driver's license, you're committing a crime. And you can't be expected to do that. There were several cases last year where, at least two that I know of, where we covered it, they didn't get their licenses renewed, and they were driving around without a license because they didn't want to play into this system. And, you know, also for the sake of those people who had been rejected by that system. So it's forcing kind of a criminality on people who don't have licenses to drive. And driving is necessary to function in this society.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Yeah, no, and it is very difficult if you want to resist the law. It's very hard. A number of people have been put in very difficult situations because of it.
So, namely in states like Florida, where things are really spread out. Let's go over a few things. Let's talk about this in context of other big database state agendas. We just got that big Bamford drop at Wired. The NSA Utah Data Center. It's recording this.
Seems likely.
Yeah, it seems pretty likely. You know, now that there's something like that on the horizon amid tons of other privacy invasive issues, to maintain perspective, most of the people who are kind of magnetized to this issue concerning national ID and identity really got energized around a lot of the privacy issues. You know, do you have any words towards what people can do to engage that? Because NSA is in a different place than, say, your state-based bureaucrats with the ID cards.
Yeah, no, it's a very difficult issue. I mean, the NSA is, the ACLU has been sort of tilling at that windmill, if you will, for quite a while. I mean, we've certainly raised concerns for years about NSA's access to domestic communications and what they're doing with it. I mean, I remember some, you know, all the way back in 2007, where we saw stories of NSA essentially giving tips to the FBI that, you know, turned out to be largely worthless. The FBI used to call them chasing pizza guys. But, you know, it's clear they're still at it. As you read the story you referenced, describes an enormous data center that the NSA is building in Utah, essentially as a place to store what looks like all the information they're grabbing, basically from the internet backbone. And it seems very likely that they in fact have we know this from whistleblowers, have the ability to tap into the backbone of the internet as part of the AT&T network.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of what can we do, I mean, this is clearly not something that you're gonna sort of take out in one fell swoop. I think we're beginning by just trying to find out what's going on. I mean, Senator Udall and Senator Wyden have been really vocal in talking about Section 215 of the Patriot Act and how, you know, those provisions have been interpreted in a way to allow essentially a secret interpretation of the Patriot Act that we're not sure even yet what that secret interpretation is or what it means. But I think one of the things that we should start with and we should expect from our government is an explanation of what they think their authority is and what they think that, you know, they are legally allowed to do. And you know, we can argue over what they should or should not do, and we certainly have a lot of concerns about some of the things that we think they are doing, but I don't think anybody should really be able to dispute that everybody should understand what you think the legal basis is for what you're doing, you know, what's the basis for the programs that you're undertaking. I mean, really fundamental things like how you understand the law to work. I mean, in the United States, we shouldn't have secret laws. So, you know, that's just a small step, but I think it's a first step towards helping to understand what, you know, the NSA is up to and what a lot of these large government programs are up to.
Okay, I'm going to try to plug it all together. You know, in the big picture of all these issues, because you're the guy who deals with all of it. Definitely on the digital, if you were to put it on a spectrum of reachability for the average person, how reachable is that versus real ID in terms of the database state?
You know, it's tough. I mean, in terms of, like, the average person's ability to affect it, I mean, real ID was a great issue for advocacy in some ways because it was state-based. You know, it involved state DMV actions, local officials who are more accountable, perhaps, or certainly closer to their constituents. You know, a lot of the stuff about the NSA is federal. It's sort of national security, and it's secret, and it's these relatively small group of officials who say, no, you have to trust us. I mean, not even the whole government really understands what's going on with these practices. A lot of times, it's just a relatively narrow number of key senators or staff and national security officials. So that makes it hard to get that change. And equally, it makes it hard to know how big an effect it has. I mean, clearly the NSA is gathering a lot of information, but equally clearly, something like a national ID card or a real ID has a real effect on people's lives. It's like, you know, the cop on the street is going to stop you and say, you know, I want to see your papers. I mean, that's a huge effect on your personal liberty whereas the NSA spying on you is also a huge impact on your personal liberty, but it's not that cop in the street stopping you. So, you know, they're both important. Mm-hmm. I think we want to focus on both of them. And certainly at the ACLU, we're very worried about both national ID cards and, you know, massive government surveillance.
all of this data valence is going to swim together eventually. And I think as they multiply the efforts, this is the direction it's going to continue to go. I've got one question to Obama. He's taken a position on E-Verify. What do you think about his position that he wants to integrate E-Verify with comprehensive immigration reform?
You know, the ACLU opposes E-Verify. We think that it's a, you know, we think that the system has too much of a potential to become a national ID card. We still think there's too many errors in it that keep lawful workers from being able to get jobs because of a mistake in the system. So we don't think that, you know, the program should go forward with or without comprehensive immigration reform. And you know, we view those issues as being separate. So, you know, we'll continue to say that. You know, it's like anything else. I mean, there's very few people in D.C. that, you know, we're going to agree with 100% of the time, or honestly disagree with 100% of the time. So where we agree, we say so. Where we disagree, we say that too. In this particular instance, we would disagree with the president.
One last question to circle back to Real ID, because that affects immigration-centered issues. Where do you see Real ID taking a place with immigration reform or comprehensive immigration reform?
It's a good question. I have a hard time seeing anything tied to Real ID at this point because there's so much ambivalence about whether it's going to go forward at all and what form it's going to take. So I have a hard time seeing anybody trying to link it up with a new bill like a comprehensive immigration reform bill. Doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but seems somewhat less likely.
So we've been talking to Chris Calabrese. He's the ACLU Privacy and Technology Legislative Council. One more thing to ask you before you take off. Is this a serious or not serious issue? And how much attention do we need to be paying to our states in terms of these little nuances?
Well, I think that, you know, it's a serious issue in that, you know, if states keep pushing forward on ID security stuff, and they seem like they're doing that, we have to pay attention to it, whether it's under Real ID or whether it's independent. So I would say things to pay attention to are, if states are taking my documents and converting them into an electronic form, how secure is that? Who can access it? What measures are in place to prevent them from being accessed by outside identity thieves or crooks in the DMV? Are there measures in place that allow me to get an ID if I don't have the documentation but can prove who I am in some other way? In other words, are there good appeals processes? Things like that I think everybody should pay attention to because, you know, they're all part of, you know, government serving us, not us serving government, and, you know, and protecting our privacy.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
You've been listening to a Beat the Chip special podcast for the net. We've been speaking with an ACLU counsel, Chris Calabrese, who's covering the Real ID hearing today in Washington. It doesn't appear that there's been much of an update or much of a move one way or the other, but it doesn't release you from any vigilance to stay on top of what your DMV or your state DMV's policies are for license handling. If you care about your own privacy, you heard his admonishment to more or less stay on top of what's going on with the EVE system, or the EVVE system, which is different from E-Verify, but it will trap your birth certificate. So, and the federal government does not have a great track record for information security of their own personnel. So I'll supply an infographic, which actually will be embedded with a petition to continue to demand the repeal of this law, because it forces average citizens like you, if the machines don't like your documents, or if for whatever reason they don't like your birth certificate, or they don't like your data, and it spits you out, you're going to be in a criminal disadvantage if you drive or try to travel or fly or do things that you really need to normally do. Real ID is bad news. It's continuing to be bad news as long as it's a law. So it's best to get those bad laws off the books if you can. So let's continue to petition the government and ask for what we really need, which is we don't need real ID, so it's okay if it goes away. You've been listening to a special podcast edition, featured exclusive. You can stay on top of real ID and national ID and data valence news updates on beatthechip.org. Thank you so much for tuning in. Tell your friends and circulate that petition. We really need your help. Prominent link at the base of this podcast information. Sign and circulate. Sign, evangelize, and circulate. Thank you. Thank you very much.